and leadership and all that stuff. But if you could just give us a nutshell from a scientific standpoint, what the workplace should look like emotionally.
Well, why don't we start with teams and then move over into some leadership things? Would that be
sure?
All right. And teams is actually pretty relevant because so much of the workplace now is being done with other people. In fact, one of the great arguments about should we go back into the workplace or should we can we do our stuff remotely is simply because the ability to form teams and get things done as a team is an extraordinarily vital component of the American workplace, and I'd argue the Western workplace in general. So what do we know about teams? Well, we know a couple things about teams. This is the great work of Anita Woolley. She's now at Tufts, where she published a paper in Science asking the question, what makes a good team? Now, she'd known from previous work that there's individual intelligences and there's something collective intelligences. And we've known for a long time that on average, groups, teams, tend to solve problems better than individuals do. There is a collective intelligence there that you can tap into, and as opposed to an individual intelligence. But, Mark, you know as well as I, there are teams that you want to spend the rest of your life with, and there are teams that are going to make you pull your hair out and make you want to go get another job. Some teams just suck. They just do. And some teams actually work really well. And Anita Woolley was really interested in this whole idea of what makes a team collectively intelligent. What makes them work well together? What makes them have the ability to solve problems? In the laboratory, we use things called the McGrath test, circumplex inventory. There's lots of ways to measure how productive groups of people are versus individuals. And here's what she found. She discovered something called C factor, for which she is very famous. C factor. C stands for collective. And if you have a team that has high C factor, then you've got a team that is a problem-solving machine. They're nimble, they're quick, they're insightful, they're creative. They're everything you want to be on when you're on a good team. So what are the components of C factor, of course, is the next question. And you can sort of think of C factor as a stool with three legs on it. Leg number one, social sensitivity. Actually, it's a concept called theory of mind. Teams with high C factor have high theory of mind. What theory of mind is, it's the ability to understand, in lay parlance terms, Mark, it's what makes people tick. You can understand what makes people tick. What you're looking for is that you're beginning to understand the intentions and motivations of another. You're developing a theory of their mind. Some people can actually go inside, can meet someone very quickly, and then understand with very little cueing the rewards and punishment systems inside that person's head. They can understand very quickly what makes them tick. And that's called high theory of mind. And that's a quantity that can actually be measured in the laboratory. It's measured through what's called the Reading the Mind in the Eyes test that was developed by a guy named Simon Baron Cohen. Do those two last words remind you?
Yeah, Sasha.
Simon Baron Cohen, he's Brit. He works for the National Health Services there. He is one of the world's authority on autism. And his cousin, Mark, is Borat.
Oh, my gosh. And you actually talk about Borat in the book in terms of one of his, you know, characters who are are tone deaf and have no theory of mind at all.
Right, with the dictator. In fact, that's there. Yeah. I don't think there's much art in my books, but I try to be a little more art congruent there. Yes, he developed something called the RME, Reading the Mind in the Eyes test, measures social sensitivity. And the first leg of the three legs of this stool is a high social sensitivity. Groups who have that have strong theory of mind, and you can measure. Number two. Something that's called conversational turn-taking behavior, or CTT. Conversational turn-taking behavior. If you videotape a group while they're busy trying to solve a problem in the laboratory, and it's a high-functioning group, you'll find something absolutely extraordinary, Mark. They don't interrupt each other. They don't interrupt each other.
Wow.
They have social hygiene, would be the best way to say it. No
so
one
they're good listeners.
They're good listeners. But it's more than that, though. They're also, no one tries to dominate, so that there's a self-monitoring component to this. And if somebody is not contributing, they're very likely to kind of go over to the side and go, you know, you haven't said anything in a while there, Bill. You know, got anything for us? Would you talk? So there is a conversational turn taking. I'm going to use the word gentleness. That's not what I mean. Maybe it's more like respect. But the nut is they don't interrupt each other, and they seem to give everybody else enough breathing room that they have a chance to ventilate their conversations. Number three was the bombshell when it came out. But it's real, and it's been replicated. It's the presence of women in the team.
Wow.
The more women there are on the team, the higher the C factor becomes. And she actually titrated it. By that, I mean the more women that were on a team, the better the scores became. Yep, you can even bring it up to about 100%. In the workplace, that is, we're in so many cases, particularly in the C-suite universe of the workplace, it's not dominated by women. It's dominated by men. But Anita's great work is to show that teams actually have very particular constituents that have to be put together if you want them to work well together. And executives ought to know about Anita's great work. So in terms of teams, and you're talking about the emotional irv of a place, the emotional atmosphere in a workplace, one of the first things you need to have is you need to be able to work together as a team. And we know how. We know how to do it.
Wow. John, do we know why women have, you told me over lunch a few weeks ago that women are twice as good at theory of mind, twice as good at sort of understanding the motivation of the other person.
Yeah. And Anita even addresses it in the science paper I am describing, where it is that she shows that the social sensitivity scores, the RME scores, tend to be much, much higher. Double is not too much to say, especially in what are called, this is Robin Dunbar's work, who's done this separately, not a part of the Anita team, but came up to show that with Rebecca Swarbrick, showed that women in what are called second and third order theory of mind tasks are twice as good as men are. Do we know why? No, we don't. All human behaviors will have both cultural, environmental, and genetic components. They all do. We call them nature and nurture. And figuring out how to parse that out is something that is beyond what the data can say currently. All you can say currently is that. And by the way, that theory of mind score, where women are scoring higher than men, is seen all over the world and in every culture that's ever been tested. And it's been done in the Pacific Basin, done in Africa, done in Europe, certainly done in North America, done in South America. You see the same thing over and over again. Wow. I don't know why. I have no idea.
That's amazing. Excuse me. When I think of some of the best managers that I've had, I think the majority of them are women. I mean, when I really think about those managers who really cared and listened and that I felt had empathy for us as employees, that's wild.
Well, I think one of the things that it communicates, what empathy can communicate, is psychological safety. And that's important. If you feel like you are